If you love the History Extra podcast, make sure you follow us to keep up to date and get all the latest episodes. Thanks for your support, and I do hope you enjoy this episode.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the Global X Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing, carefully consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Co.
Hello, and welcome to the History Extra podcast from BBC History Magazine, Britain's best-selling history magazine. I'm Rob Attar. More than seven decades after the pilot Kenneth Arnold spotted nine mysterious objects flying above the Cascade Mountain Range in Washington, unidentified flying objects still attract international attention. This month, UFO enthusiasts have been eagerly awaiting the release of a US government report that details sightings of unknown aerial phenomena. To coincide with its release, our digital section editor, Rachel Dinning, caught up with Dr. David Clark, author of How UFOs Conquered the World, The History of a Modern Myth, to find out more about the highly anticipated Pentagon report, as well as the history of our obsession with mysterious flying aircraft.
At the time of recording this interview, we're actually awaiting the release of the Pentagon's much anticipated report on UAPs, which stands for Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. So what do we know about this report so far? What do you expect it to tell us?
Well, I think it's best to look at it in the terms of like the historical context, and it isn't actually the first report on this subject that had been produced by the Western intelligence services, because they're the ones that's always been involved in doing these kinds of studies and analyses of strange things that people have seen in the sky. It's like the latest in a long line of studies. The earliest actually in the USA was there was a CIA study that was done in 1953, and that was right at the heart of the Cold War, when they were very worried that some of these things that were being seen at that time on radar and by pilots were Russian. You know, we were right on the edge of like possible Third World War. So obviously, if you were the CIA or the British equivalent, you'd be very worried if people were telling you that there were these things that were being seen, that sometimes apparently were being picked up on radar. What were they? Were they some kind of advanced Russian spy plane or something that the enemy had developed that we didn't know anything about? And obviously, from the point of view of defending the realm, this is something you've got to take very seriously. So quite separately from all the sort of ideas about aliens and, you know, visitations from outer space, that really wasn't ever the concern of the military who investigate these things. And I think that's what we've got here with this new Pentagon report, because obviously things have been seen, some of them by US Navy fighter pilots, things have been seen on radar again. And many historians would say that, you know, here we are in a new Cold War. And it's interesting that this report has been produced almost like as an echo of what went on in the 1950s. So we've got exactly the same issues again, you know, mysterious objects being seen by pilots, being seen visually from the ground, and on occasion being detected by electronic equipment such as radar, and far more advanced radar than what we had in the 1950s. But I expect that the report will produce pretty much the same conclusions as we saw from the earlier ones in the 1950s.
So sadly, no revelation that we have indeed been visited by extraterrestrials from out of space.
Well, I think like everybody, I would love there to be evidence produced of that kind. But I think being realistic, I'm all the years that I've been studying this subject, I haven't seen any evidence that any of these things that have been seen, even by pilots and radar stations, etc., none of them really sort of provide that hard forensic evidence that you would need to say that this is something from outer space. But from the point of view of a historian, that really isn't my concern. And I mean, whether something is true or false is one issue, but the impact of the subject in terms of its social and political impact is another matter altogether, and that is worth studying from the point of view of history, sociology, folklore even, because ultimately what we're talking about is people's beliefs about these things, and you need to really separate out the evidence from people's belief and their desire for something to exist. That is fantastic, that's beyond anything that we understand. And what we've got to understand about this report that the Pentagon are preparing, it's an intelligence report. It's not a report that's being produced to satisfy people who believe in aliens. It will be very, very technical. It will be using statistics and evidence from computers and statistical analysis and from what they've found on radar, etc. It probably very impenetrable parts of it, because it's written for a particular purpose by intelligence officers.
Mm-hmm. And why is this Pentagon intelligence report being released now? What's the context? What's prompted the US to release this? And are there parallels between this one and the previous report that was released in, was it the 1950s?
Yeah, there was the CIA report, which was really just a survey of the evidence at that time. And what happened was it was all done in complete secrecy, as these things often are, because this was the Cold War. And it was just a panel of security-cleared scientists led by a physicist called Dr. Bob Robertson. And basically they spent 3 days with the United States Air Force presenting what they had as their best evidence at that time. And they basically just looked at it and couldn't see anything that they deemed to be a threat to the defense of the USA, which was all they were interested in, and just recommended that the US Air Force debunk the subject. And they even talked about getting Walt Disney Corporation involved in an education campaign, you know, saying we can't have people clogging military communication channels at this really perilous time in the Cold War with all these UFO reports, because what happens if the Russians did launch an attack? And we were scurrying around investigating these reports of flying saucers, and the Russians had landed. You know, we'd missed it because of the fact that you can see why they were worried about this. But the thing with UFOs is you can't kill it off; it won't go away. And people at that time, back in the 40s and 50s, thought it was just a fad, a bit like, you know, people seeing the Loch Ness monster, and they thought, oh, you know, give it a few years and people will move on to something else. Well, here we are, 74, 76 or whatever it is years later, still talking about the same thing. And in 1952, there was a big wave of sightings of UFOs and radar detections over Washington, D.C., that even President Truman was concerned then. And what happened then was the U.S. Air Force launched an investigation called Project Blue Book. And that ran right up to 1969, and they collected something like 12,000 reports. And at the end of the day, then they thought, well, we can't carry on doing this. So they gave a contract to the University of Colorado to look at all the data. And the University of Colorado took on this contract. They produced a really hefty report. They looked at the 12,000 reports that had been produced, and they found something like, I think, about 700, 6% couldn't be identified. So they remained unexplained. But their conclusion was the same as the one of the CIA, that, you know, the vast majority of these things, if enough resources are put into investigating the sightings at the time they happen, they can find a conventional explanation. And there's a whole host of these, balloons, aircraft, bright planets, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many, many different things that become UFOs, because the U in UFO simply means unidentified. It doesn't mean alien craft. And so what we've got here with the new report is the New York Times basically published a story in 2017 saying there was a secret study going on again, even after they'd said in 1969, right, that's the end of it, we don't want to look at this subject anymore. They clearly have, at a very low-key level, been collecting sighting reports and looking at them, as you would expect any Department of Defense to do. You know, if an unidentified aircraft is detected, they will look at it. Yeah, so what happened was that there's a small group of people who, right in the high levels of the military and government establishment, who are believers in UFOs and aliens. And it's the same in Britain as well. The 1950s, we had people like Lord Mountbatten, who went on to become Chief of Defence Staff, and Prince Philip, even, in the royal family, really, 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 really obsessed with the subject. And there were certain people in the military establishment who believed in it as well. Henry Tizard, who was Minister of Defence's Chief Scientific Advisor, he was instrumental in setting up the first British study of this subject, which was bizarrely called the Flying Saucer Working Party. which again was set up in secret in 1950. It took information from the CIA about what they were doing, and it produced a report that was used to brief Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister, in 1952. So all those sort of people, all those things were created as a result of pressure from the media, and this is exactly what's happened in this case, that the New York Times story in 2017, it's just built up this like rolling sort of media pressure, and eventually senators have got involved, and that's forced the US government to act, which is why President Trump signed off this report in the end.
And would you say that it's less a question for the public and the media of national security, and more of a question of the intrigue about the mythology and the alien side of things?
Yeah, you've got these two aspects of it. The military interest in it is purely from the point of view of military intelligence. Are any of these things that have been seen and detected enemy craft of some kind, or enemy? I mean, we're not even talking about craft now, because these drones that these two adverse, well, three adversaries, you've got America, Russia, and China now. And the technology that they're working on, these tiny drones that are capable of hypersonic speeds, it's quite obvious if you read some of the descriptions of the pilots that have reported some of these things in the Atlantic and Pacific, they're talking about tiny objects. I mean, one of them describes the thing that he saw near his aircraft as being suitcase-sized. Either that's come from the other side of the universe with little diddy aliens inside it, or it's a drone. So the most likely explanation, and this is interesting because the report that was done way back in 1950 for Winston Churchill employed something called Occam's razor when it looked at the evidence. And Occam's razor simply says, it's a basic scientific principle that if you've got a problem that you need an explanation for, you choose the most likely explanation, not the one that requires the most ridiculous sort of explanation. So, like, if you've got a problem like a UFO sighting, what is the most likely explanation? That aliens have travelled billions of miles, aliens that we don't know exist, just to buzz an aircraft and then vanish? Or has that pilot either made a mistake? Was it an optical illusion? Was it another aircraft? So you see what I mean? So that's the way the military look at it. But of course, the media and the people who believe in UFOs, and it's almost like a semi-religious belief, that we're talking about here, they will not accept those down-to-earth explanations. They prefer the explanation that these things are, I mean, what are the phrase that's been used, that they are advanced technology by non-human something or other. But what they're talking about are aliens.
Yeah.
But in a lot of cases, they won't use the word alien, but that's what they're talking
it's
about.
A lot
you need
more...
a very high level of evidence there to show that that's the case.
It's a more fun story than it's just a drone. Well, just a drone is very subjective as well.
Yeah, I mean, from my days as a journalist, I remember having this chat with some colleagues, and it's like a headline that says, you know, a woman sees UFO from outer space makes a great story, but a story that says woman sees light in sky, it turns out to be Venus, isn't a story,
sure.
Really, is it?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I wanted to ask you to clarify, actually, what is the difference between a UFO, which is a term that most people are familiar with, and a UAP, which is what is being used in the Pentagon report?
Right, well, that's a very good question, because that, again, allows us to set all this in context, because there's actually three different names for these things, and the one that's triggered it all off was flying saucer. Because the guy, again, it was a journalist who coined the phrase flying saucer, because the very first sort of modern sighting, which was in 1947, was a chap, the American pilot, that saw this formation of nine objects that he described as like batwing shaped that were flying above the Cascade Mountains in Washington. He was out looking for a crash plane, and he saw these things in the distance, and they were traveling at some fantastic speed. And when he landed, the news reporters said to him, how would you describe it? And he said, oh, it's like if you can imagine getting a saucer and skipping it across a pond. So he wasn't talking about they were saucer shaped, but some sub-editor came up with flying saucer. And then everyone started seeing saucer-shaped objects, even though this guy hadn't actually described them as being saucer-shaped. So 5 years later, when the American Air Force got involved in doing a proper investigation of these things, they thought, we need to get away from flying saucer because that implies aliens in disc-shaped objects. So Captain Ed Ruppelt, who was the head of the American Air Force Project Blue Book, he came up with the phrase, with an acronym, UFO. So he wanted to get away from flying saucers and come up with a military phrase that didn't imply that these things were alien. So unidentified flying object to him at that time. As you know now, and as everyone listening to this will know, when you hear the acronym UFO, you think of flying saucers. So we've had 50 years of UFOs. And because of the fact that UFO has now become the, in terms of culture and pop culture, the same as flying saucer, the military intelligence people sometime in the 1990s have thought we need another acronym, move away from UFO, because we know that most of these things that have been seen, the most interesting ones, aren't objects, i.e. solid objects. They are phenomena of some kind. There are lots of different things that cause them. So that's how they came up with UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena. So they've got rid of the object. So they've been talking secretly about this. So when people have been asking, do you investigate UFOs, like with the British Minister of Defence? Oh, no, we don't investigate UFOs. And they're not lying, because from their point of view, they're looking at UAPs, not UFOs.
Oh, that's very sneaky. Very sneaky.
It is sneaky, but this is how they operate. And the British Ministry of Defence, they commissioned a study, a bit like this Pentagon one, that's not had all that much attention, in the late 1990s, shortly after we had the 50th anniversary of the Roswell incident in 1997. We had the X-Files on TV, and the British MOD at that time, they faced a very similar pressure from the media and from MPs and peers in the House of Lords who were interested in this subject. And they commissioned an intelligence study in 1996 that was delivered in 2000. And I found out about this using the Freedom of Information Act and managed to persuade them to release it. And it's a really hefty thing, 4 volumes, I think it's some 300 or 400 words. And the amazing conclusion they reach is that these things exist. There's no doubt about it. Quite a stunning conclusion in there that they can fly around at incredible speeds, land, take off, this, that, and the other. And I was reading this and thinking, this is a Ministry of Defence report that concludes this. But the rub was that there's no evidence that these things are alien, that something exists. The tiny proportion of sightings that they can't explain, some of them, you know, by pilots and qualified observers. But the author of the report says that these things that we can't explain are some kind of atmospheric phenomena. This is where we get to the UAP. And he proposed something that he called atmospheric plasmas. Now, if you've got the patience to wade through this huge report, he claims that there's evidence that meteors that impact on the Earth's atmosphere burn up and they create some kind of plasma that continues to sort of exist in the atmosphere. And his theory was that this is what the pilots were seeing. You know, like the Aurora Borealis, you know, sort of luminescent blobs of light that have their own sort of volition that can move around and this is what he proposes. Now, I read this and I just thought, well, yeah, fair enough, but what you're actually saying is effectively, I'm proposing one unexplained thing that scientists don't accept. We need to be clear about this. His statement that these things are atmospheric plasmas is just as much of a theory.
It's just as much of a theory as aliens. Yeah.
So he's proposing one unexplained thing that we don't know about to explain another unexplained thing that we don't know about. Isn't it just easier to go back to what Winston Churchill was told in the earlier study? Occam's razor is the best way to look at this, that the simplest explanation is the best one. And the simplest explanation is that people see things in the sky that they can't identify, that they always have done. You can go all the way back to Roman times. There's accounts of, you know, in the Roman annals of people seeing shields and things in the sky during, you know, centuries and centuries ago. But there are a range of explanations for them. Lots of them quite boring ones.
I wanted to ask, oh, it always is. The simplest answer is often the most boring one, sadly, as you said. I wanted to ask as well, you mentioned that initially when the, you know, the flying saucer idea came about and people got a little bit obsessed with it, that there was an assumption that it would sort of go away and that the interest would die down, a bit like maybe like the Loch Ness Monster, sort of an interesting story that, but no one really, well, some people might believe it, but that's not the case. In fact, there's, you know, huge amounts of the population who very much believe that governments are covering up the truth about extraterrestrials visiting the Earth and it's a big conspiracy theorist. What do you think it is about this specific story that means it's garnered such a cult status?
Well, I call it a modern myth, and that's what it is. But the thing is, I often get people reacting to that, saying, "You're saying it's false that people are lying." Well, I'm not saying that, you know, because there are lots of different meanings of myth, and the media use the word myth to connote something that is inherently false. You know, it's a myth that, but actually, myth, if you use it in its correct context, simply means a story, a belief system that people have created in order to explain something that they don't understand. So effectively, UFOs are the greatest modern myth. You know, it is impossible to kill them. It is impossible to prove that we're not being visited by aliens. And this is the real problem faced by the Pentagon and by all the governments who in the past who've tried to look at this subject. You can't prove a negative. So you can never prove that we have not been visited by aliens. How would it be possible to do that if you put the whole GDP of the Western world into investigating it? And every time someone saw a light in the sky, you had a big X-Files sort of investigation. You might be able to say, right, well, yeah, that was a planet, or that was a, you know, that was an aircraft. But the UFO believers will always come back to say, well, yes, you've explained that one, but what about this one? You've got to accept that this is something that is not going to go away. It's got semi-religious aspects to it, in that how if someone said, you know, disprove that God exists, you can't do it, can you? Because that people just will continue to believe that these things exist, no matter how much the government debunks it. They will say, ah, well, why are they debunking it? You know, they must know something that we don't, sort of thing. So governments are in an impossible position, and it is effectively all the things about it suggest it's got myth-like qualities. And also the UFO as a symbol, I think in perilous times, you know, like we're going through the COVID pandemic at the moment, people are feeling depressed, they're feeling the mistrustful of science, and the wanting to have something beyond science. And the UFO is like an anti-science symbol. It's something that comes in and disrupts science whenever we try and explain everything, whenever we try and bring the universe under control. Up pops a UFO. Ah, well, you can't explain that. So that gives people something. It's like a magical symbol. It's like a, it's like an appeal to magic, you know, like we used to believe in fairies when we were kids. You know, it's like, you know, clap if you believe in the fairies. Well, it's the same with UFOs.
Almost a comfort thing, but also maybe a slightly anti-establishment thing, I guess.
Very much so. Right. Very much so, yeah. And I would not want to debunk that, because I think having things to believe in and having magical symbols is fascinating. And as a folklorist, this is what I study. It's not, I'm not interested in whether it's true or false. I'm interested in its impact on society and on individuals. And in terms of the people who see these things, I wouldn't. Some people make their stories up. There are well-known, well-publicised hoaxes, but the vast majority of people who report seeing flying saucers are genuine, ordinary people who've had an extraordinary experience, and not all of them can be explained. We can't explain everything. And just for those listening, as a bit of an experiment for you, the next time that you're out with a group of friends or in the pub and you're talking about UFOs, just ask your friends, how many, have you ever seen one? And I guarantee that in a group of 5 to 10 people, you will have at least 2 or 3 of those people who've seen something in the sky they can't explain. Now, if you extrapolate that on the population, you're talking millions of people who've seen things in the sky.
Still to come on the History Extra podcast.
And we're now in a new Cold War, and that's why it's so interesting from a historian's perspective. We're suddenly talking about UFOs again.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/History Extra. Just go to Indeed.com/History Extra right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
And as you mentioned already, the mystery of UFOs has drawn attention from high-profile figures, including presidents, prime ministers,
yeah.
Prince Philip.
Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. What have some of these various figures said about UFOs over the years that's been particularly interesting?
Ronald Reagan, he was as you know, a film star, and he's one of his favourite films was apparently The Day the Earth Stood Still, which is original 1951. That was all about aliens coming to Earth in a flying saucer at a time when the Russians and the Americans were about to destroy themselves with nuclear bombs. And the alien comes down and it paralyzes all the Earth's defenses and says, you know, you've got to start talking to each other, otherwise we're going to destroy the Earth. And the interesting thing was, apparently at a NATO summit or a Cold War summit in, I think it was Zurich in 1985, Gorbachev actually was amazed when Reagan said to him, "What we need is a threat from outer space, because that's the only thing that's going to unite us." And it was like Gorbachev was apparently absolutely stunned when he heard this. But even that, Reagan's statement on that wasn't unique, because way back in 1947, beginning of the Cold War, Anthony Eden, the British foreign secretary at the time, apparently said something very similar, that what we need in order to sort of save the world and stop us from descending into a new world war, third world war, was a threat from Mars. So this subject keeps coming up.
Aliens, the peace-bringing solution to the world's problems. You spoke about people who've experienced alien abductions or experiences. Would you mind telling our listeners about some of the ones that are perhaps the most high profile?
Yeah, well, the best known story of this kind is the one that triggered it all off, although there was earlier accounts, was from the 1960s, and there was a couple in America called Betty and Barney Hill, and they were a mixed race couple, which was unusual at that time for them to sort of come up with a story like that. And they were driving through New Hampshire late one night. I think they were coming back from holiday, and they saw this light in the sky. And they got into a really sort of worked up state about it. And Barney Hill, who was active in civil rights movement, he thought he was about to be captured by whoever it was on this thing that they could see in the sky. And when they got home, they worked out that they'd lost a period of time. So like two or three hours, I think it was. And they then pursued retrieving memories of what had actually happened to them in that time. And they went to a hypnotherapist called Dr. Simon in New Hampshire. And he hypnotically regressed them. And this amazing story emerged about how this light in the sky had landed. And then these beings had come out who were dressed apparently like Nazis. But the description of them changed because originally they were in military uniforms and then they transformed into sort of more alien-like creatures with big sort of wraparound dark eyes. And they both, Betty and Barney, were taken on board this thing and they were given like medical examinations, et cetera, et cetera. So when that came out in the media, because there was a journalist called John Fuller, wrote a book about it in 1966, and it was serialized right across the world, all in the news media. And that effectively set the template for alien abductions. Because I think with UFOs, there's only so many stories you can read about people seeing odd things in the sky. And eventually the novelty wears off. And that's what had happened with the media, because there was this period in the early 1960s where after a decade of flying saucer sightings, the media just lost interest in the subject. It was just like, oh, another one, you know. So the alien abduction thing actually put new life back into the subject. And then newspapers started reporting similar stories from people who said that similar experiences had happened to them way back, you know, in the 40s and the 50s. And then this is how the subject has evolved, because you've got alien abductions and you might remember crop circles. They're never talked about now, but that was another thing that came along. Then you've got the Men in Black, who are obviously the agents of the government who are going around trying to silence people who've had these experiences. So you've got a myth, and you've got all these little sub-myths like the Men in Black, the crop circles, the alien abductions, the conspiracies. And that's what have allowed the subject to sort of transform. And of course, you've got TV and film. You've got things like the X-Files that revived the subject in the 1990s. All the big films, for example, like Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind that was released in 1978. If you plot those, as I have, against, say, the Ministry of Defense's UFO log, and they used to keep a log of how many sightings were reported to them, you see these massive spikes. And those spikes aren't, well, there's more aliens visiting us in 1978 than in 1997. It's simply that people have watched and seen those TV films and gone to the cinema, and they've come out of the cinema, and rather than looking at the ground or at the bag of chips or whatever, they've looked up at the sky and seen something and thought, oh, maybe that's one of those UFOs that I've just seen on Steven Spielberg's film. So there is this relationship between pop culture and the media and this subject that's, I find, the most fascinating.
That is really interesting. It makes a lot of sense, because there's an element sometimes, I've felt this, when you come out of a cinema, you've just seen a really great mind-blowing film, you had that escapism for a bit, and you want it to continue.
And that's the same with me, because I went to see Close Encounters of the Third Kind in 1978 when I was 10, and it blew my mind, and that's what got me interested in the subject.
Right.
You know, right from being 10. So I've been involved in, you know, sort of as a journalist, as a UFO researcher, and as a folklorist, ultimately, looking at this subject now for some 40-odd years.
What, in your view, are some of the top UFO sightings from the last sort of 100 years or so?
Well, there's a lot to choose from there, but the one that seems to get all the attention in the UK is the Rendlesham Forest incident, which really is an American story, but it's happened in Britain because it was a group of American Air Force personnel based in RAF Woodbridge in Suffolk, 1980, during the Cold War, and one night they saw these lights apparently crashing into the forest outside the base, and the base commander ordered an investigation, sent his men out with Geiger counters and torches, you know, a bit very X-Files. And they sort, a group of them said that they'd seen this object that had actually landed in the forest and come down through the trees and broken branches off the trees, etc., and left radiation. And they wrote a report on this that went to the Ministry of Defence, and it's since become, you know, sort of like, the only story from the UK that's ever talked about in terms of UFOs. But there are many, many others. The one I really like, and the one that I spent a lot of time looking into, is a similar case from the 1950s. And this is where an American base, in Suffolk, Lakenheath, they started seeing these mysterious objects whizzing around over the air base late at night, 1956, height of the Cold War. And this is when they had the U-2 spy plane actually on the base, top secret CIA project. So they thought, what is going on here? Is it the Soviet Union that's sort of, spying on the secret CIA project? So they alerted the RAF. They looked at the radar picture and saw an object whizzing around as well at some high altitude. And all through the night, they were scrambling jets, RAF fighters, to go and intercept this thing that was flying around over Suffolk. And this was all kept top secret at the time. It didn't emerge until the late 1960s in the Blue Book report, actually, you know, the one we mentioned, that University of Colorado. And I actually, this is about 20 years ago, and when some of the people were still alive, I actually tracked down the guy who was in the radar station in East Anglia, who actually picked this thing up on his radar at the time. And he was the guy who pressed the alarm button and scrambled all the aircraft. And he remembered it absolutely clearly. And he was in his 90s when I interviewed him in 2001.
What were his immediate emotional responses to that happening? Was it panic? What did he say? Yeah.
Yeah, panic. It was like, oh my God, is this the Russians? Are they here? You know, and they've managed to, because the radars were looking out towards the Soviet Union and they would expect to see something as it came over the horizon. And when he was alerted to this, it was here over East Anglia. So it was like, oh my, you know, we must do something now. And the pilots, I tracked down three groups of pilots who'd actually got this in their logbooks that they'd been scrambled and they were told not to talk about it, it's top secret. And one of them said, I distinctly remember picking it up on my airborne radar. This was in an RAF Venom. And he was, this controller on the ground was saying, it's behind you, it's behind you, you know, and now it's in front of you, it's in front of you. And he was trying to sort of maneuver his aircraft around this thing and get behind it because he was used to intercepting aircraft. And this was obviously not an aircraft.
Right. That's like something out of a film in itself, unfolded.
But the conclusion, what was the conclusion, you see? This was the interesting thing, and I actually found these 23 squadron logbook that actually talks about it, and it says, we concluded it was a balloon.
A balloon.
A balloon.
I mean, it does sound suspicious. You can see why conspiracy theorists would be like, a balloon caused that much of doesn't quite add up to me.
But you can see how people looking at that with a conspiracy frame of mind years later would say, that can't possibly be a balloon. But from the point of view of the pilots, they were saying it's something that we'd never seen before and we'd been scrambled loads of times. This was the one thing that stood out as the most unusual in their entire flying career. But they weren't saying, we think it was aliens. They were saying, thinking about it logically, this was a stationary object that could be seen on radar from the ground. We could see it on our airborne radars, stationary. That's why we couldn't intercept it, because we kept zooming past it and then having to sort of circle round and come by. What's the most logical explanation for what it was? A balloon. But you see, people will say, how can a balloon move at the fantastic speeds that the Americans said it was moving at from the ground? Well, the thing is, with a lot of these UFO cases, it's not one thing. And if you look at when this happened, August the 13th, and the night of August the 13th, August the 14th. Now, if you're an astronomer, you will immediately see relevance in that date, because that is the height of the Perseid meteor shower. and they're zooming around in the sky, and they can be picked up on radar. So it's possible that what triggered it off was the meteor shower. That's what the Americans had detected. We sent up the aircraft, and it just so happened that there was a stray balloon, maybe a meteorological balloon or something like that, and that's what then became the UFO. And it's a mixture of psychology and expectation and the will to believe, and all mixed in with government secrecy and pop culture. It's not one thing that creates UFOs. That's the only way, really, I can explain it all.
Have you ever seen anything that's given you pause for thought?
Yes. Lots of things, but nothing that I would say I can't explain. You know, I've seen like flocks of birds, you know, as the sun's setting and the sun's rays are sort of hitting them, seagulls, for instance, and you see what looks like a formation of objects in the sky and you think, what is that?
Right.
And it's only because I'm interested in the subject and I thought, oh, that's an interesting thing. And I watched it and then it's resolved itself as a flock of birds. And I've seen shooting stars. If you didn't know what it was, you might think, well, what's that? And I'm sure thousands of years ago, people saw things like shooting stars and they thought they were messages from the gods.
Well, that's the other question I was going to ask, actually. Has, you know, sightings of unidentified flying objects predate the last century, don't they? People saw things in the sky all the time. Yeah, what sort of instances do we know about what people saw in the past?
Well, there are so many. I mean, and one group of sightings that are often very rarely mentioned, but are very relevant. Just before the First World War, there was a thing known as the scare ships. Newspapers at that time, we were in like almost like a Cold War situation with the Germans, in that the Germans had developed these huge dirigible airships called Zeppelins, and the British had nothing to compete with that aerial superiority that the Zeppelins gave the Germans at the time. So there were all these stories started appearing in the newspapers in 1909, 1912. And again, strangely enough, Winston Churchill asked a question in Parliament about this, because there were all these sightings of lights in the sky over the British Isles. And people didn't think, it's aliens. They thought, it's the Germans. They've obviously got this fantastic Zeppelin and they're using it to spy on all our sensitive military installations. So there were thousands of people in the UK, in Hull, Southampton, central London, who were calling the newspapers and saying, I've just seen one of them Zeppelins. And it's because people had this expectation that the Germans had got this fantastic technology, as it was at the time, and they were obviously going to use it to spy in preparation for the coming war. Now, we know in retrospect that there was a war and the Germans did send real Zeppelins that bombed British cities. But what were the things that were seen in 1909 and 1912? Because when we got to see the German war diaries, they'd never used any of the Zeppelins to travel over to the UK before the first bombing raids in 1915. But it's like a precursor to the present UFO scare. And there was a similar thing in 1946, just after the Second World War. I mean, we can also mention the Foo Fighters, you know, the famous rock band. They're named after sightings of mysterious objects by fighter pilots and bomber crews during the Second World War. I mean, who were both in Japan and over Central Europe. Both sides both saw these fantastic objects that went whizzing around, moving at fantastic speeds, which the Americans called Foo Fighters. And then after the war, in Scandinavia, you had hundreds, perhaps thousands of people seeing what they thought were V2 rockets over Sweden and Norway, that British intelligence at the time were really worried about this, assumed it was the Russians who'd captured some of the German V weapon technology and were just firing these things over Scandinavia for some bizarre reason. But again, the conclusion that was reached on that was that these were daylight meteors, that people had seen something real, i.e. a meteor, and because they were so worked up about the Russians and V weapons, that they thought these things were rockets or ghost rockets.
Projecting their anxieties onto something else.
Yes, and I think that's what's going on with UFOs. I mean, and Carl Jung, the psychologist, famous psychologist, he wrote a book on flying saucers in the 1950s, and that's what he decided these things were. He said there's something real, but there is also this psychological projection, because people's fears and anxieties in the Cold War, and the Cold War gave birth to UFOs, and we're now in a new Cold War, and that's why it's so interesting from a historian's perspective. We're suddenly talking about UFOs again.
What do you expect the reaction, just sort of bringing it back to this Pentagon report now, and as we near the end of the podcast, what do you expect the reaction to be when it's released? Do you think it's going to, are people going to be disappointed?
Well, I think the people who are expecting this report to confirm what they already believe, which is that aliens are here, there's no doubt about it. There's lots of evidence that aliens have visited us, and the government is covering it up. I think they will are bound to be disappointed, because that isn't the purpose of the report. It's not to confirm those beliefs or even deny those beliefs. It, as an intelligence report, and having read lots of intelligence reports on this subject over the years, it will simply be a very dry, factual analysis of, I think they've looked at 20 years sightings, and I think they've had 120 really good reports. And these will be military reports, because what's happened is they've just stopped looking at reports from members of the public. They want hard evidence. So they will be looking at, I mean, the best group of reports is this is the ones from the USS Nimitz, the aircraft carrier. And there were, I mean, I've got to say, some of those sightings that have been, they've interviewed some of the fighter pilots, and they clearly saw something very, very odd. And they didn't just see it on one occasion. In fact, they were picking these things up on radar for like 20 days. They were seeing them every single day, and they were sending out aircraft, U.S. Navy Super Hornets, to try and intercept them and get some kind of hard evidence on radar or on their cockpit cameras. And you've seen the videos. The problem with those videos is people. There's been some really good photo analysis done of them, and every single one of them can be explained as ordinary things like aircraft and balloons and things. But the media the media are playing a role in hyping this up, in that they're only talking to the believers. So that, to me, is interesting in itself.
Well, that sells the story, doesn't it? Talking to the believer, because they've got the more interesting angle.
And this goes back to one thing that Carl Jung said back in the 1950s. Why should it be more desirable, from the point of view of the media, for UFOs to exist in terms of something exotic or alien than for them not to exist? And I think that is a very, very pertinent question in terms of what is going on today.
That was Dr. David Clark, Associate Professor in the Department of Media Arts and Communications at Sheffield Hallam University, and former consultant for the National Archives UFO Project. You can find David on Twitter at @shuclark or on his website, drdavidclark.co.uk. Thanks for listening. This podcast was produced by Ben Ewart, Jack Bateman and Brittany Colley. We'll be back tomorrow to discuss the Cold War battle for Berlin.